635 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Valiant Sunday episode, and today Jesse and I are going to give you guys a little sneak peek into a couple of Valiant titles that are coming out this coming Wednesday. Jesse and I have already read Bloodshot Rising Spirit number 2 and Livewire number 1, so we are going to just give our opinions, our thoughts on those two issues. Spoiler-free, of course, because we want you to be able to go out and pick them up for yourself, read them, and enjoy them. And then we're also going to talk about the announcement this last week from Valiant about their initiative in 2019 called Breakthrough. And also pay attention to the Comic Source Twitter feed today, because I'm also going to be tweeting out a picture that I obtained, perhaps through some back channels of a whiteboard where Valiant was planning out the future of the Valiant universe. So there's a lot of information there. If you kind of peek around the corner, read between the lines, you may be able to get some clues of what's coming up in 2019. So I think we're going to start with Bloodshot Rising Spirit number 2. Let me ask you first before we dive into the issue, Jesse, what were your overall impressions of issue 2?
Well, I have three opinions on it, and they all converge. The first was that it's not a bad issue. The second is that it's heavy on science. You can definitely tell that the writing team and creative team wanted to discuss. They wanted to sound really smart. Or as smart as they could with the science fiction side of things. And the third is that it wasn't very strong on the military, tactical, strategic side of things, meaning that the creative team has probably never actually researched warfare tactics and military setups whatsoever, which is fine. It kind of reminded me of a late 80s, early 90s G.I. Joe issue with a lot of very good scientific discussion, trying to explain the origin and background of our protagonist and title character.
Yeah, the first thing I noticed, well, let me give the creative team here before I dive in any further. Written by Kevin Grievous, we have breakdowns by Ken Lashley, finishes by Ryan Wynn and Oliver Borges, colors by Diego Rodriguez, and letters by Simon Boland. And yeah, I kind of agree with what you were saying, Jesse. It, you know, right off the bat, we see that the writer is just Kevin Grievous. So we've lost Lonnie Nadler and Zach Thompson. You know, we talked about it last time. We talked about the first issue. We were wondering if it was perhaps the sudden and large workload that Thompson and Nadler have from their X-Men work over at Marvel. That maybe prevented them from continuing forward with writing Bloodshot Rising Spirit. So, you know, Kevin Grievous, he works a lot in film. Not to say that he hasn't written other things. I mean, he wrote the Underworld series of movies, and he actually the big, huge African American werewolf that speaks in the really deep voice, that's Kevin Grievous. So he's an actor as well. And I think he's a good writer. He hasn't done an extensive amount of comic work. And, you know, I won't say this is a poorly written issue, but yeah, there is a lot of scientific jargon. I didn't research any of the terms myself to find out if this is like just pure science fiction stuff or if the things that he's talking about, kind of the procedures with RNA and such, are actually like real, like things that are actually being worked on. So it's interesting to think about from that perspective, if this is kind of has a basis in real science, and does he want to take the book in that direction? Would be a direction we haven't seen Bloodshot go before. And it could be interesting. It could work. As far as the military tactics, yeah, I was never in the military. I don't have much practical knowledge of it. So I deferred it to Jesse's expertise, but I will say that, yeah, it did seem a little cartoonish in the sequence of events. So that wasn't of particular note to me. It was just kind of like, yeah, he's chalking up to comics. But one thing I will say about that is typically that aspect of Valiant Comics is usually done really well. There's always a kind of a degree of realism to Valiant that makes it stand out from some other books. So I would hate to see that not improve in this title, because then it's going to have this Bloodshot Rising Spirit series standing out from other Valiant titles, but not in a good way. If it comes across more
cartoonish, is a good word. Cartoonish is a good word. When you look back at Bloodshot Island with Miko Tsuyon, every detail was flawless, mm-hmm. Artistically and written wise. When you look at The Analog Man with by Louis LaRosa, same thing. When you look back at Bloodshot issue 25 and the story of the Glitch and a couple of them, they put painstaking details into the reference material. The gear was right, the weapons were right, the way they moved, the way they fought. It looked like a really good storyboard for a film, you know. Mm-hmm. Whereas this isn't bad. This is entertaining, but this is more like, use the gun, kick the door, do the process, press the button, you know. And it's really kind of empty in that regard. It might be good if you're an 8-year-old kid, perhaps, which is maybe what they're trying to do. But it's a hop, skip, and a jump away from what we have seen in the past with the Bloodshot mythos. And again, I'm not saying it's bad. It's definitely a different look and feel.
Yeah, and I would hate to find out that the reason it's like that is because of laziness. You know what I mean? Because it does seem at times a little bit lazy storytelling. You're not using reference material of real guns to draw from and things like that. It's just, again, part of what makes Valiant special is the realism. I mean, obviously it's not real. It's not reality. These are superpowered beings. But there is that level of realism you can bring to the aspects of the story that do exist in real life. And there's no reason not to. Valiant has always done it in the past. So it is, the onus is somewhat on the creative team themselves to be sure they're getting it right. The other thing that I noticed in one aspect of the story, I wonder if they're trying to make Bloodshot look visually a little more like the Vin Diesel version. I won't go into detail on that. Jesse will know exactly what I'm referring to. So that stood out to me. I was like, oh, huh. Yeah. They went that direction, huh? So, it's a wait and see at this point for where this kind of goes. I do feel like it was a bit of an improvement over the first issue in terms of the flow of the story. It wasn't quite as choppy, but I feel like it was a step back in terms of the artwork. So I don't know if we can look to the credits for a clue to that, why it doesn't look quite as good. It might be the fact that Ken Lashley just did breakdowns, so maybe he wasn't giving art that was as far along in terms of detail as he did give to Ryan Wynn and the other inkers for the first issue, because I thought the art here was a little bit, to use that same term again, a little bit cartoony, and it goes right along with what Jesse and I were just talking about with, the guns are clearly not referenced after, actual weapons. They look, like weapons you'd see in a G.I. Joe cartoon, just like Jesse said. So, as far as the panel layouts and the storytelling from panel to panel and the flow of the story is fine. It's just, I think in terms of the detail work, it wasn't quite as polished as the first issue in terms of the art. What do you think, Jesse?
Yeah, I'm not sure about the Vin Diesel thing yet. It's definitely a different look for the character. The artwork is definitely, I don't know. It's definitely more kiddish. I would say almost like if Nickelodeon did a Bloodshot story, as opposed to, like a anime version, with like severed heads and mech warrior robots.
Yeah.
It's a different style, you know, it's a different feel. And it conveys kind of, well, you know, because it's an experience, it conveys a different message. You know, I mean, I'll still read it. I'm kind of interested, and I'm happy that it's, you know, we're getting different, inputs on his past. I'm happy that we're kind of, you know, getting that backwards expansion somewhat. It's always good for, really firmly establishing a character forever. I don't know. I just, maybe I'm spoiled, you know, but, we've had some really, really good Bloodshot for the last, you know, 6-7 years. And, the bar set pretty high. I mean, even when you're talking about, you know, Rivera's art and the Valiant, which was definitely, you know, not necessarily what I would call, anatomically flawless.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. Yep.
I'm not entirely sure if I care about a single character in this issue yet.
Yep. Yeah, there's and again, we, you know, we had talked about this previously, just based on the fact that they are going back and telling a story that we basically know what happens after. It's kind of like the Star Wars prequels, right? Like, at the end of the day, you watch them because you love the characters, but you kind of know the ending. Like, the Bloodshot has to end up in that place eventually, that he was in at the start of the Bloodshot series in 2012, right? So we kind of know the ending. It's the journey to get there, and that presents unique challenges, because how do you can't go too crazy, you can't have too many surprises, because ultimately we know where he ends up. We kind of already know the punchline. So it does present some challenges to make the story compelling. All right, let's move on to Livewire number one. We give the creative team really quickly. Written by Vita Ayala, art by Raul Allen and Patricia Martin, letters by Sada Temafonti, whose work I hadn't seen before. I have to say, I loved this issue. It's doing exactly what Vita told me she was going to do when I spoke to her about this title at New York Comic Con. And that is really, really confront Amanda McKee Livewire, like, full on, not trying to walk back any of the damage that she did when she made that choice that she made in the Harbinger War prelude. She is being forced to confront the choice that she made and the devastation and damage that it caused, even from her own secret weapons teammates. And so it's really great to see that Vita is not trying to shy away from it. And it's going to be a long and painful road back for Livewire to be trusted again and to come to terms with what she did. I think it may in a way follow her around forever, and it kind of should, based on the damage that she caused. As far as the art goes, you know, it's the same art team from the Secret Weapons miniseries, so I love the consistency that brings to these characters. And overall, yeah, I just really, really enjoyed it. And I'm really curious to see where the issue goes from here. The other thing that I'll say is, and part of this, again, is based on the fact that it's the same art team, so you're adding that level of consistency. Their style of art does have a lot of realism. So I love that. You know, it's doing exactly what we just said the Bloodshot issue didn't do. So I love that. The last thing I'll say is, I think beyond being a good storyteller and having a good plot and a well-paced issue, Vita's really great at dialogue as well. This feels, in dialogue and kind of tone and voice, a lot like what Eric Heiser did. And I was a little bit worried about that, just because of how high in quality Secret Weapons was. And I think a lot of us Valiant fans were sad to see Eric move on from Secret Weapons, just because it was done so well. And I wanted that same that same level of or that same feel in tone and voice as far as the scripting goes. And Vita nailed it. So, yeah, I'm really excited for Livewire. And now that we have the end of Ninja K and Shadow Man coming up, this may take the number one spot for best ongoing Valiant series. The quality of the first issue leads me to believe that it could easily happen. What are your thoughts, Jesse?
So I wrote one of the first reviews on Livewire One a couple weeks back, and so I'll just say exactly what I wrote in that article. I was very disappointed initially with what had happened in Harbinger Wars, the debacle that it was. I've minced no words on this. I thought that it was a complete a disaster. And so, you know, when I saw that they were announcing Livewire One, I was like, oh man, I really, really want Livewire as a series. I think it needs to happen. But man, I don't know if this is the right time in history to do it, because they have really fouled this up. And what are they going to do? Make it, like, you know, just as bad as, is it really going to be Livewire anymore? I mean, you know, is this just going to be like, the thing that could have been? And so I entered into reading this issue with my fingers crossed and kind of like almost like, you know, ready to cringe, and I didn't. They did a great job with it. It was a good book. I echo your statement. It feels like something Eric would have been involved in. It has a look of that. They don't dumb down or mitigate any of the fallout of her actions. In fact, it's almost like the writing and creative team listened to yours and my discussions about this very, very topic and said, damn, they might be right, and took action. I don't know if that's what happened, but whatever it is, they got the point. And so now I think this is a book that older Valiant fans, not by older, I mean, I'm not talking about 1990. I'm talking about, like, you know, the guys that have been following since 2002. They might jump on board with it. I think that they'll be pleasantly surprised. It is a good book. It does set up a lot of possibilities. It is familiar in appearance. It is quality art and quality writing. And yeah, I'm a fan.
Yeah, I agree with you. It just, I mean, I'm flipping through the digital copy, review copy here now, and looking at the character beats and the moments. You know, like I said, dialogue, and yeah, it really feels almost like the Harbinger Wars 2 event. And I'm not talking, I don't include the prelude in that, because the prelude was done by the original Secret Weapons team, Eric Heiser, and I thought that was done well. But it's almost like the four-issue series was like a nightmare. Maybe I could just forget that happened, fill it in with what I think should have happened or the way it should have gone in my mind. And go just directly from Amanda making that fateful choice she made and then laying down in that parking lot because of exhaustion, basically. And then we pick up here, you know, flash forward. So, yeah, really, really well done. And I'm excited. This is an issue. Like, it's been a long time since I've been really excited to see other Valiant fans' reaction to something. I'm really excited to see how this is received. And I hope Vita gets the credit she deserves for doing such a great job with this issue. Really, really well done. All right. I wanted to talk about the Valiant Breakthrough announcement, and I'll just kind of go over, and then we can give our – Jesse and I can give our thoughts and what we might expect on these four issues. So it was a series of miniseries that were announced. We have Life and Death of Toyo Harada, which we already knew about that one, coming from Joshua Dysart. I'm really excited for that. I know that it's going to come out on time, no delays. It has a couple of really great artists on the book as well, in Kafu and Miko Suyan. And it's completely finished in terms of being written and drawn, I believe. So looking forward to that coming out. It's kind of Josh's period at the end of the sentence when it comes to the story of Harbinger and Toyo Harada. And I thought that it was going to be 6 issues, but it's a 4 issue limited. And then we also have Punk Mambo, which is a 5 issue limited, coming from artist Cullen Bunn with art by Adam Gorham. I'm excited for this one too. Cullen Bunn is an excellent horror writer and a really talented writer. Punk Mambo is not really a character that I'm that interested in. I think the most fun I ever had, or the time that I read a story with her that I enjoyed it the most, was in the most recent Ninja K series, when she was she had teamed up with a Voodoo Loa. So I did enjoy her in that. So, based on the fact it's Cullen Bunn, I know I'll check it out and we'll see, where it goes. The next one is, Fallen World from writer Dan Abnett and, art by Adam Polina. I'm a big fan of Abnett. I've been loving what he's been doing on Aquaman for the last few years. And I love that, somebody of that caliber is coming over to work at Valiant. You know, you always worry with the turnover and change of leadership and editorial over there that they wouldn't be able to get established writers or established creators anymore. And so it's good to see somebody of Dan's talent level still being interested to go over and work at Valiant. And this is continuing the future storyline in Valiant. So it continues the tale that we saw first start in Rai, and then go into the 4001 AD event, and what happened at the end of that. So this is in the year 4002 AD, and we'll see what Rai's been up to since the last time we checked in with him. And then, and actually, does that say? Yeah, that's a 5 issue limited as well. And then the last one is called Killers. It's from writer B. Clay Moore and artist Fernando Daganino. And it says it's a contest between the deadliest super spies on the planet as they compete for the ultimate prize. And it's a 5 issue limited that's going to start in June 2019. And in the promotional art for that one, we see Ninja A, 1945, supposedly deceased, but maybe not if he's in this, you know, promo art. Then we see Ninja E, 1963, disappeared, and then Ninja K. So Colin King, who we recently saw quit basically as Ninjak, and it says Ninja K 2019 disavowed. So curious what this prize might be, this ultimate prize, especially to see Colin King back in the promo art anyway, back in his Ninjak gear. And, you know, he said he quit. Quit being Ninjak, quit working for MI6, quit, like, was he going to go underground? What could get him, you know, if that's the case, get him this prize, whatever it might be, get him back off of the sidelines? Because as we know, with the kind of the situation he's in with MI6, you know, are they really going to leave him alone? Or if he sticks his head out, could he run the risk of getting it shot off, basically? So that might be the one that I'm most curious about, just because I have, you know, we Jesse and I speculated last time on what they might do with Ninjak next. So I don't know. It's between that one and Life and Death of Toyo Harada. I'm such a huge fan of Joshua Dysart. I can't wait to find out what happens there. So what are your thoughts on these series, Jesse?
Well, I'm definitely tracking to the Life and Death of Toyo Harada. I've got all my chips invested in that one. That is the book that matters the most to me personally, because really Harbinger and Valiant are almost synonymous. And anytime you go too long without a good Harbinger book, it starts to drift away a little bit. There's a lot of storytelling that we as fans for a very long time have been waiting to hear. And this is that story, you know, God willing, right? And I'm a big fan of Cafu. I think Cafu can do no wrong. I've never seen him do bad work. I've never seen Josh do bad work. So I'm major anticipation for this one. Go get it. Punk Mambo. I have nothing wrong with Punk Mambo. No problems with Punk Mambo. You know, I think it's cool how she's gone away from excessive glue sniffing to actually wearing Loas. I think we needed that. Might as well have some more you know, Shadow Man-esque characters out there running around. Adam Gorham's a good artist. I know he was responsible for all that was good in Dead Drop. But he's done a lot of other quality covers throughout the Divinity series and whatnot. He's got a very unique style, very good pulpy comic book style, so you can have some fun with that. Fallen World, I'm excited for, because Fallen World basically is Rye. The Fallen World is, you know, Japan has come down from the heavens and has collided with Earth, so that is the Fallen World, right? I'm interested because I've been waiting for a couple of years to see where that story goes. You know, we last saw at the end of 4001, looking towards the future. And there's a lot of people in the year 4001, 4002 to pull from. We're looking at Rye. We're looking at possibly War Mother. The Eternal Warrior still running around out there. We've got Bloodshot, Nanite infused, no longer Ray Bloodshot up running around there. I'm pretty confident the Neela Time Walkers has potential. You have another Rai, which is Sai and her son Ryoko. So there's a lot of stuff that could potentially come out in Fallen World, and I've got high hopes for that. And lastly, for Killers, we could just call this, if I'm guessing here, the next Ninjak title. Because Ninja K, the very first few issues definitely set us up with the backstories and all the various ninja program operatives. And from the looks of the promo art, that's exactly what we're dealing with. I find it interesting that in the logo, it has the K and the I are blood red. So is that a reference to Ninja K and Ninja I? I don't know. We haven't seen Ninja I introduced yet. To my knowledge. So, there's some excitement, with that issue as well. I mean, that series as well coming up, especially with, all the buildup that came from the Ninja K series, which as you and I both know, was phenomenal. So all in all, I would say this is absolutely good advertising. This, appears to be a breakthrough for 2019.
Yeah, I agree. I'm really looking forward to a lot of these titles. If I haven't heard any pushback on it yet, but the one thing, I haven't heard any pushback from Valiant fans specifically on this announcement. But one thing that I have heard that hasn't been going over too well, especially with Ninja K ending and then Shadow Man ending, you know, a couple of really quality titles we talked about last time. It's the fact that series aren't lasting very long at Valiant. And, you know, the one thing about this announcement, it is an announcement of four limited series. But at least they're coming out and saying it right from the start, right? That these are limited series. Other than XO, we don't really have anything that seems to be going past like 10, 12 issues or so. And I think that the Valiant fans are kind of worried about that. Like, does that mean that they're not doing well as a publishing company? I really can't answer that. I would say that I understand why they're doing it. They want to keep the line manageable. You know, they are relatively smaller in terms of, you know, publishing size. They want their fans to be able to read everything. They want to stay around 6-7 series that are being released at a time, which does allow everybody to hopefully pick up their whole catalog. So I understand all that. And I also understand the aspect of the marketplace where everything is kind of told in seasons, to put it in kind of television terms, right? And so you tell a story, you tell a particular arc or two, and then you let the property sit while you go and tell stories in another corner of the universe. And then you come back later and you pick things up. If you're not a fan of the whole universe and maybe you only read Ninjak stuff or you only read Rye stuff, then yeah, it's gonna bother you. It's gonna negatively affect you more. You know, like Jesse said, we've been waiting for Rye for a couple of years now. So I get it. And that's not to say that if the Bloodshot movie doesn't hit and explode, that they might not have an infusion of both capital in terms of financially, but also like fan capital, and then they do feel like they can expand a little more. But I'll just say this about anybody that's worried about this kind of aspect of Valiant right now. I much rather would have fewer books if it means they're better than have more books and have the quality and the talent diluted down to where, you know, we're only buying and reading them out of habit rather than the fact that they're good. I mean, I feel like we got spoiled right out of the gate because the quality of these books was so high. And overall, I have to say it's not quite to the level that it used to be, but the potential is there to get back there and to even surpass. You know, a book like Livewire is as good as any first issue from back in 2012 in my mind. So any comment on the fact these are all limited, Jesse?
No, some stories, some concepts, some sales pitches just are short lived. You know, and it allows them, they may be filling some time, as we've talked in the past. Valiant may be trying to figure out what they're going to do with their marquee characters. What are they going to do with Ninjak? What are they going to do with an Eternal Warrior? What are they going to do with Bloodshot? You know, once they really get in and hit their stride. We know they're ending a lot of series. And now they're filling some time here with these mini series. That's going to buy them several months, to work things out, to kind of rearrange things, to play with the Rubik's Cube of the publisher. And, they may be able to get all the colors on one side. And then, after these mini series, say, okay, here's where we're really going. And then they may move in that direction. That's my, you know, strategic thought. If I was in their shoes, you know, cause they had a rough start, with, Harbinger Wars 2. Everybody was kind of like, I knew it. Here it is. Oh my God. You know, they suck. I knew it was going to happen. And it really did it. I mean, Harbinger Wars did, but I mean, but Ninja K was good. Shadow Man was good. Livewire is already starting to be good. Maybe this buys them some time. Maybe these are some of the lingering projects they had out there, and before they can move on to become the publisher that they really want to be.
Yeah, and plus we have the Incursion event coming up in early 2019, and that may kind of set some things on their head, and you know, we may get. I would think that that's probably going to lead into some other things. I'm pretty sure Shadow Man's going to be a big part of that series, so I could easily see another Shadow Man series coming out of Incursion, and who knows what else we might see. It is a line wide event, so it's just got to be patient. You know, things don't happen overnight. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for this episode. I do want to remind everybody of our 12 days of Comic Source giveaway. You can go and check out the rules in the show notes. Quick reminder, basically what you need to do is you need to retweet the official tweet announcing this episode on Twitter with the hashtag the 12 days of the Comic Source. And you also need to send a direct message on Twitter with the secret code word. You do those two things and you'll be entered to win. See, the giveaway for this episode is Bloodshot Reborn Volume 1, which is an incredible read from Jeff Lemire. So you definitely want to get your hands on that if you don't already have a copy. So be sure and send me a direct message with the secret code word. And based on what we talked about in this episode, I think the secret code word is going to be several words, actually. Emotional support bird. Which, once you read Livewire number one, you'll understand what I'm talking about. That was a really cool moment in the issue. So be sure and send me a direct message with that secret code word and retweet the episode to win that trade paperback of Bloodshot Reborn number one. All right, everybody. Thanks for joining. As always, please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.